Charm of Favor, Chapter 18.
How many of these do you want made? Asked the engineer at Griffin Machine and Fabrication.
Just the one will do. I appreciate you working so quickly. It looks even better than I expected, said Adnan.
Usually I can figure out what something does as I'm machining it. I don't usually work with 7068 aluminum of this size. I mean, I've made a few racing parts and some parts for airplane kits, but a piece this size is not easy to find. These angles and the bore tubes got me baffled, that's for sure. At first I thought it was a centrifuge, but that would require that it spin, and there's no central bearing mount. What does this thing do? Asked the engineer.
I'm sure I do not know exactly. It's rocket science, said Adnan, shrugging his shoulders and smiling. Both men laughed.
Here's the invoice. You just want me to send the bill on the same PO? Asked the engineer.
Actually, this is off budget. This part name here is the only record. You know how it is. If it works, my boss takes the credit. If it doesn't, we blame it on NASA. So I'm going to pay for this right now, if that's possible, said Adnan.
Absolutely. End of the month. I can close it out in the black instead of carrying it over. Besides, those government projects sometimes don't pay right away. You know how it is, said the engineer.
I'll remember that. You came through for me. I won't forget this. Seriously, you saved my ass, said Adnan as he scribbled out the check and handed it to the engineer.
Pleasure doing business with you. You need help loading that? Asked the engineer.
If you don't mind, you can load it with the forklift with a small pallet into my vehicle. That would be great, said Adnan.
Sure thing. Just pull around to the dock. We'll get you loaded, said the engineer.
By sundown, Adnan had made the trips from each of the four machine shops back to his remote shop in the woods of the Stennis Space Center grounds. It was the perfect location for someone without a social life. The little building was made of steel, with a steel roll-up door and a man door on each end. It had withstood Hurricane Katrina when many buildings did not. His programming job paid well enough that he could have moved to New Orleans if he wanted to, but this was much closer, and there were no neighbors. He inserted the small thumb drive into his laptop and opened up the detailed drawings to begin assembling the machined aluminum parts. 7068 aluminum is just about the hardest aluminum that can be bought. It is precipitation hardened by raising the metal to high temperatures and then carefully exposing it to zinc vapor. The result is a lightweight metal that is equal to steel in tensile strength. The top was shaped like a bowl with a thick flange around the lip with bolt holes evenly spaced. The cavity would be lined with a shaped and fired ceramic explosive that fit perfectly. The North Koreans had perfected the process of polymerizing the RDX chemistry into the ceramic to make the entire construction conduct electricity. It would achieve 5,500 meters per second within a few millionths of a second. This was bolted to the heavy centrifuge-appearing part, with 12 cylinders converging to the top of the third part of the assembly with upper half of large diameter sphere about the size of a basketball. This had been polished to a mirror finish. This would be bolted to the bottom half of the sphere. The two halves had been lapped with diamond compound to fit within 0.5 microns to form a perfect seal. The bottom of the assembly was a perfectly shaped and armored compartment designed to protect the electrical components that would power the bomb. All that was needed now was to mount the microcircuitry that had arrived from North Korea via Pakistan. The round beryllium case was grounded to the machined aluminum with the silicon wiring harness routed through a grommet to connect to the piezoelectric valves located at the bottom of each of the small cylinders. They could hold 20,000 pounds per square inch and release in the same exact microsecond, forcing tritium into the small casing of plutonium captured inside the baseball chamber. When the two halves were bolted together, there was no place for the explosion to go but through the solid 3 inches of 7068 aluminum. At that precise moment, 12 cylinders full of fresh tritium would supply a plethora of energetic neutrons to enrich the chain reaction rate. After all, aside from high-quality plumbing, A nuclear power plant is simpler than an internal combustion engine. The bulk of the controls are designed to use lead rods to soak up the excess neutrons from radioactive decay for a high-pressure steam turbine. If the plumbing and the rod controls function correctly, the plant makes electricity for about 3 years before the reactor has to be refueled and the saturated rods are trashed in an abandoned deep mine in New Mexico or Tennessee. Weapons that have to be stored for long periods of readiness are also a challenge. Tritium is a generally artificial molecule made from sticking two neutrons to a hydrogen proton. It is an unhappy marriage that comes apart naturally in about 14 years, unless it is ingested by humans, in which case the beta decay is much shorter. As it is a small particle and prone to a short half-life, tritium in weapons has to be refreshed if it is in storage for a long time. Everyone on planet Earth hopes that weapons remain in storage forever. So there is an entire industry full of technicians that deal with this process. Unlike all the North Korean equipment, this device was vastly redesigned to be small. There was no need for stability because it was designed for immediate deployment. Adnan molded the aluminum pillow batteries against the lid and fed the wiring harness through the lid to the upper chamber where they would be connected to the switches and valves. He had practiced this many times, but this time there was a small, warm sphere in the heart of the machine. The entire philosophy behind weapons design was developed billions of years ago as God and his creations battled over who exactly was the rightful heir to the universe. The management of enemies is a meticulous business for beings who wish to keep populations in a constant state of mistrust. America spends more on weapons and war systems than the next 25 countries combined, and 21 of those countries are allies. The ancient evidence for global annihilations of entire zeniths of mortals on Earth proves that management of wars is not easy. Even when meticulous balance between enemies is maintained, once the destructive force reaches a certain level, continents can be sunk into the sea and tropical forests can be turned into deserts. Once the weapons are energized, recovery is often impossible. Billions of lives can be extinguished in a matter of hours or days. It is a time of immeasurable loss for some, and intense celebration for others. Solid tritium requires temperatures near to absolute zero, as well as pressures barely contained behind 2 inches of tool steel. The magnetic fields capable of accomplishing fusion are far too large for something as tiny as a weapon, so implosions are used to crush the protons into one another. That crushing force needs to remain uniform for a few millionths of a second so that they have no hernia of escape. The crushing frequency needs to be very high in the range of X-rays, so typically simple atom cannon technology is utilized. That, however, requires materials very hard to get and easily detectable from space. So the North Koreans developed a piezoelectric pulse oscillator to entrain the neutrons in the chamber, sort of like a microwave oven using X-rays. The challenge of achieving the power necessary to make it efficient had been overcome with a simple technology transfer while Bill Clinton was president. The rest of the microelectronic circuitry they hacked from South Korean computers. The supercapacitors could discharge a virtual lightning bolt in a fraction of a second, energizing the piezoelectric membrane to form a perfectly spherical compression on the solid tritium fuel. The extra neutrons accelerated the chain reaction, and the yield had been tested to a level of several hundred kilotons. The beauty of the weapon was that they were scalable to megatons when used in unison, fired from satellites simultaneously. The red herring was the challenge of delivery. For years, the Americans worried about the empty aluminum cans they launched for thousands of miles into the sea through space. They chased the submarines and worried over the placement of their jets and mobile launchers. It was like watching pets lose their minds chasing a laser spot around the living room. They fell for it every time. The virtues of the tritium weapon were numerous. The beta decay was virtually untraceable and easily contained. The fuel was stored by the millions of gallons at the Stennis Space Center, because it was based on simple rocket fuel. There was actually very little physical destruction upon detonation, unless it was on the surface. It was lightweight and could be disguised as simple industrial equipment painted safety yellow, splattered with mud, and added to any common pneumatic supply system. The real beauty of the weapon was the electromagnetic pulse it generated. The blast would scarcely break windows 3 miles away, but the voltage generated by this weapon was expected to overload every antenna within 600 miles in any direction. Every overhead power wire, every cell phone tower, and every power station would have its integrated circuit controls destroyed within seconds. He thought about home as he masked off the stencil into place. He shook the can of black spray paint and carefully misted the paint into the exposed areas on the exterior. The maps had changed because of Western imperialism. Hitler's lust for power had inspired the Persian Shah to reduce one of the world's greatest legacies into Iran. But they were not Aryans. They were Persians, and they should again be one of the older brothers of humanity. He believed in the cause, but saw past it to another future, where they would betray the corporate conglomerate that believed it controlled the world. He coughed a chuckle through his mask as the paint fumes irritated his throat. "The snake controls the mongoose, does it?" he asked himself. He tore off the tape from the other set of letters and draped the green paper over the black letters he had just painted. He grabbed the red can, shook it, and painted the other half of the logo. "Looks good from I-59, he said through the paper mask over his nose and mouth. The detail was perfect, although it didn't have to be. Ingersoll Rand made air and gas compressors and had dryers of all types. He checked the advertisement one more time to make sure his fabrication looked the same. His contact was an abatement contractor in Nashville, Tennessee. It was such a detestable industry, full of asbestos, dust, mold, and heavy metals. No one minded if immigrants did work like this. No one cared about plastic curtains, scaffolding, and hoses lying everywhere as compressed air was used to blow and to vacuum offices, warehouses, factories, and miles upon miles of plumbing throughout the thermal system in the city, heated by a local trash-burning recycling operation. His piece of the equipment was finished. All that was needed now was compressing the fuel and charging the capacitors. It only took one day to reach Nashville by hotshot truck. He wiped the paint residue off his hands with Xylene.